Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the incredible Creekside Room, today's speakers are Barbara and Mike Burr, and they will be speaking on Families and Values, a Biblical Model. So let's listen in on Barbara and Mike Burr.
This is part of a series that have been doing on step families. And looking at biblical models of families to see how that really relates to the whole phenomena of step families. And I changed the title today because it has the biblical material, I think, has relevance beyond just step families to all kinds of families. So I wanted to try to find a whole map. So. Okay. When you think of the biblical model of family or biblical image of family, what do you think of?
The woman at home slaving.
The woman at home slaving? Uh-huh. Okay.
Man out in the fields.
Man out in the fields. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The man making all of the decisions.
Man making all of the decisions.
Mm-hmm. The woman being quiet and talking only to other women.
The woman being quiet.
Or talking only to other women.
Okay.
I think a male and female God created.
Okay.
Helping for each other.
Okay. Male and female, woman home, man working, quiet.
What we think a family is?
What can we get out of the Bible as an image?
Biblical image of family.
Tribal.
And again, if you notice me misspelling something, just throw something at me or correct.
So. Well, put that down.
What?
Men can't spell.
Now, the other day, I heard that most people who don't misspell words just don't have the creative or enough mind to spell it more than one way.
No creative is at all.
No. We're not going to be down on
that. I guess male and female compliment each other to me more of a.
Okay.
That's what I see.
Mutual submission. You know, it's to me, it's not a. You know, I think it's more of a mutual.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially Jesus' description in Ephesians, or the
Ephesians
description.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Ephesians 5, yeah. It's a mutual.
Husband and wife relationship.
So to me, it's more of a team, I guess. Yeah, a common sharing, a team, I guess. And my biblical view of it, I guess. It's more of a. Kind of distorted, I guess.
Okay.
From my perception, my experience. From my experience.
When he asked the issue of biblical, we're covering a huge period of time, so it's when biblical is a question, too. I mean,
OT,
New Testament.
That's a good question.
When biblical?
Paul's time versus, you know, the whole cultural shifts. There's all different. It's very diverse.
Yes.
I think children need to be there too, because it seems like many of the biblical families, there was always the importance of children, or at least children as part of the family.
Okay, where were children?
Well, starting with Adam and Eve.
Male children.
What was the child role?
To work.
Parents.
To work.
They worked as soon as they could.
Are we looking at what we feel the Bible says to be, or what we see as the Jews and so on were. There's, you know, the patriarchs didn't do too great with some of their kids. And they made some mistakes too.
And male-female relationships weren't what we think the Bible says. So that's what I'm going with. And then that's even extended beyond the Bible. And I think that's why we're in trouble today with families, because of the distortion of what is said and what is done. Okay?
Say more about that. The male-female relationship.
Well, I think we interpret the Bible as saying that we cling, the male and female cling to each other. But even in biblical times, there was that independence, male independence versus female independence, and not by choice, but by, well, let's look at the times. We're looking at an agrarian society, male in the field, sometimes females in the field, but on top of that, caring for everything else. We can say male being in charge of municipal issues of the community, and the females, and I'm thinking when we talk about times, you can't help but think of the culture that Khomeini took back in that part of the world, and then in other parts where male and female go into different doors of their house. So, you know, we can.
There's a lot of differences.
There's a lot of differences.
Yeah.
So how does that impact what we how and what we do today?
Exactly, and that's part of what I want to get at. You know, in the last 10 years, we've heard a lot of stuff about, you know, back to the Bible and biblical family values, and you know, how we need to reestablish these solid biblical families, and I want to look at some of that. Because while some of these, while we certainly pick up these elements in different parts of the Bible, this certainly isn't the total picture of what family is about. Biblical story spans some probably 1600 years, moving from nomadic tribal society to urban society with agrarian reflections in there. And so there's a real spectrum of circumstances. And one of the things that we need to avoid any time that we start approaching scripture is proof texting. And what proof texting is, taking one passage out of the Bible and making it normative for biblical tradition. Because it just doesn't work that way. Now, here's one that I'm going to misspell. Anachronism.
You did it.
You
did it.
All right. Thank you. And when we get involved in anachronism, what we do is take something from another period and interpret it by the values and standards of our own. And so we also need to be careful of doing that. Biblical images of family are, to say the least, varied. Just to take two different people. Solomon. What was his family?
Many, many, many extended.
A very tactful and nice way of putting it.
Well, I don't know about that.
So we have Solomon on one end. Paul.
Sullivan.
You know, and there's a lot
That's
of distance.
That's an extreme.
There's a lot of distance between these two.
And a lot of time.
Huh?
And a lot of time.
And a lot of time.
Yeah.
One of the things, though, is that we need to understand is that in all of biblical literature, there is nothing that resembles what we call a nuclear family. The nuclear family of mother, father, two children, or that's 2.3 children and a dog, didn't exist really except in about the last 50 years. Biblical images of a family in the Old Testament, the two major terms applying to family are Beth and Mishpacha, and both of these refer to tribal extended clans, patriarchal structures centered around the eldest male and all of the extended wives, sons, daughters until they're married, sojourners, strangers that choose to ally with that family. So, you know, so the family is a very involved, extended structure. All the way through. In its extreme, it's the family of Abraham. The family of God is tied together by blood coming from Abraham. And so Abraham is the patriarch, and it's all tied together by blood coming out of him. In New Testament times, the phrases for family, patria, oikio, oikia, all again mean more than what we see as the nuclear family. If we look historically, the kind of image that Jerry Falwell wants us to get back to of the man working, the woman at home with the 2.3 children. That's really something that our culture has only known since after World War II. Before that, understanding of a family was again much more extended. people lived in extended groupings. I'm just in my own history on the cusp of those two cultures. You know, I was raised in a situation where I was surrounded by aunts and uncles and cousins, and then we moved out of that and became that kind of nuclear family when I was about 10 years old. Our ability to travel broke us away from that. Economic factors made it necessary to move. If we look at what happened in World War II, you know, all of the men went off to war. Women went into the workplace, but then when the war ended, all of these men came back and needed jobs, and so the women were told to go home, and that's what was that?
They've been angry ever since.
There was a lot of propaganda to get them out of the factory.
Yeah, there was a lot of government push there to create that kind of situation.
Another thing that happened about that same time was the introduction of more adequate contraception, and families started getting smaller. And where was it? The early 50s that the pill came in. I mean, that has changed the size of families dramatically. And allow the woman to have some control.
Also, life extensions. Children, many times you had to have a lot of children to preserve the family tribe. As medicine has increased, we've got added to that longevity. And so children lived longer, families lived longer. And that's enormous. Contributing to that has been an enormous process.
And I think, too, I can't draw this conclusion overall, but in our congregation, I think people of color still have a better understanding of extended family than Caucasians do. We have many people in our congregation who bring in a nephew and they live with him for 5 years. Bring in a, somebody that's not even related and keep them in their family. To me, they have a better understanding of the extended family than I think Caucasians do. And I don't, maybe that's not across the board, but I've seen it again and again in our church.
Well, and that's historical. Because of slavery, we didn't have
the families were
they were torn apart. So whoever was on the
whose presence took care of the kids.
That's right. And there is the belief system that children actually belong to the community.
Correct.
Really? I mean, when I grew up, and if I was walking on long block, and if I didn't speak to Miss Jane, by the time I got home, my mother knew about it, and we had to discuss it, and I didn't not overlook Miss Jane anymore.
You'll find out why your nose was in
there. That's
air.
Right. Exactly.
My husband, when he was growing up in Milwaukee, his mother worked if he or his brother or sisters misbehaved. Was a very immigrant neighborhood from Eastern or Northern Europe. And if any of them misbehaved, the other mothers who were at home had no qualms about disciplining them. And their mother heard about it when they got home. And they got it twice. So they had to, there was a mother around. I think the point you hit is in a large part a key to sort of breaking away from extended families being together, some mobility, increasing mobility of people. Get a new job here, a new job there, go see opportunities somewhere.
I think status too. I mean, even in African American families, the more they become a part of the economic fiber, then they are too busy to take care of those older parents or be in a when one relative needs help to call them in and invite them in to share. I think that's changed along with everything else.
Yeah, one of the things that has happened with our mobility is that the extended family system, a support system, has broken down, and I think that makes for a lot more pressure on the nuclear family. When parents get older, it very often becomes the responsibility of one child to care for the parent because, you know, for instance, in my family, you know, my mother lives in Boise, I live in Moscow, so I have the most relationship there. Anything happens there, my brothers who are in Arkansas, you know, they'll call me and give me emotional support, but that's not quite the same as being there.
That's true.
That's true.
You know? Yes.
Yeah. I live in a retirement community. I'm 75, and I'm one of the babies in the community, I might add. But it's, people live to forever. But what you're just talking about, I mean, a lot of these people that live there, their nearest relation is in New York City or something.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And it's hard on both of them because the relation worries, mother or father is alone. We form a community within the community.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's sort of a buddy system that develops and people get an appointment. Unfortunately, we most people eat together in the dining room. But you have to form a community.
Uh-huh.
You have to develop an extended family. And there are some that don't ever do it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And they just live in their little apartments. When they get sick, nobody knows.
Okay, you have to form a community.
If you don't have one, you gotta have one.
Did I pay you for that segue?
Well, I'm gonna pay you later.
In keeping with that, we have an interesting opportunity in our work with children overseas, in particular with our child sponsorship program in Nairobi, Kenya, because there, when a woman marries her husband, she becomes totally part of the husband's family. That family's responsibility and her family ceases to have quote unquote responsibility for her. And if the husband leaves or dies, usually with a couple of kids, then the husband's family feels that their responsibility has ended. And so here's a woman who's alone now with several children, usually, with few skills because she's her husband has been providing and she's been in the home or whatever. She's kind of in a never-never land.
Limbo.
Like, truly limbo. And we're working through a missionary couple been there since 1956, and these people in this area called Cubeta have formed sort of their own community, you know, where the women help look after the kids and we're helping to support the school and the kids.
This is where?
In Nairobi, Kenya.
Interesting. 2,000 years ago, Jesus addressed the same kind of problem. Some of the Jews thought that, believed that all that it took to divorce their wife was to proclaim three times that they were divorced. And then the woman was in very much the same kind of situation. And with very few resources.
Less than we have now.
Yeah. It's amazing how slowly things change or don't change. But looking at, you know, at this whole notion of family. You know, we see in the Old Testament that the defining characteristic of family was blood. It was the blood tie to the father. And this is what defined also the family of God. That as people were related to the tribe, and by covenant with God between the tribe and God, they became family of God. Then this guy came along who had some different ideas.
I like the way you said that.
And you know, for Jesus, family was very important. What do you have? Four brothers and two sisters, and you know, he knew what it was like to live in a family. But he switched around in many ways our understanding of what it means to be in a family of a God. There's this wonderful story in Matthew where Jesus is talking and says, while he was still speaking to the people, his mother and his brothers stood outside asking to speak to him. And he replied to the man who told him, well, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And stretching out his hand toward his disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. And I'd like to suggest that as new definition of what it means to be family of God. That, and it's that that allows us then to build community and to build extended family among the people where we live. You know, I live 300 miles from my nearest blood relative. But I very much experienced that the church that I am in is extended family. You know, when my wife got cancer and was taking chemotherapy and comatose about half the time, you know, it wasn't my mother, it wasn't my brothers, it wasn't anybody who was related to me by blood that was sitting in the house with her while I went to work, that was bringing in meals, that was doing any of that support and care. It was the community of people that we shared faith with and that we shared relationships with that really became family. And so I'd like to suggest that, you know, what the family of God becomes is something real simple. Those who do the will of God. And what's it mean to do the will of God? I don't know.
I don't think it's simple. To me, I'm boy.
I tell you for me where it's not simple.
Okay.
And that is when we get to racial lines. And when we talk about community, It doesn't happen unless you are in, you know, the same culture or a like culture for some.
It makes it real difficult.
Yeah, that's where the difficulty is.
Yeah, the place where I think it's simple though is in terms of understanding it, because where I go from this statement of Jesus saying, you know, here are my mother and brother and sister, whoever does the will of God, I go from there to the great commandment.
But I'll give you another story. I do home health care.
Mm-hmm.
And
Wait, let me finish for a second. And you know, the great commandment, I think, defines for us what the will of God is. You know, to love the Lord our God with our heart and soul and mind, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. Oh, okay.
Well, that's hard too.
Yeah, the working out of that.
The working out of that is not simple.
The challenge.
That's the challenge.
But when you ask the question, what is family, we've got a very profound, simple answer, like picking up what you're saying, is those who do the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
And all the stuff that's going on about returning to family and family values and all these kind of things, which are very concretized out of an act response. All of us, me included, not just the other person I don't agree with.
Very, very culturalized.
Cultural bound. Yeah. There's where the risk is going. We do have a very simple answer.
But I wanted to add the first statement that I made about culture.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Because the will of God, to me, transcends that.
Oh, yeah.
And my story in the home health care is there are here the elderly, or it really kind of at your mercy, and especially those who don't come out of their rooms, because those are the ones who have all of the somatic complaints and ills. But here as a African American woman going in, and to me, I'm doing the will of God, because you know, I look over, some of them will look and they might make a comment about, you know, you're being black. And see, I overlooked that, and I said, well, you know, I think there are some things that you and I can talk about that would be helpful to you. And when I worked daily with a dying patient, the will of God was there operating,
mm-hmm.
and it still does, because they had suspects, they had never ever worked with an African American before. This whole family, and I was the one to bring to make those members who hadn't spoken to each other for a long length of time, but in the midst of this dying sister, they came together, and I still receive calls long after her death. So that is a transition to me, and doing the will of God.
That's. An example of making love very concrete, and it seems to me that where we get culturally balled up is in trying to make all of the fine distinctions about, well, what's love, what's you know. You know, am I loving if I do this, and am I loving if I
just do it?
Yeah. And I think one of the places that we get confused is that we tend to think that love is a feeling. That love is a feeling. That Jesus is calling us to feel a certain way. And I don't know if that's the case. It seems to me that what Jesus is calling us to do is to do love
more than action than a feeling.
And my experience is that if we do love, then the feelings will come along. If we act it out, then the feelings will follow. There's a wonderful book by Dolores Caran called Traits of a Healthy Family. And she did a bunch of research into behaviors of healthy families, of families that got along, and in her book she lists out all of these behaviors, and I took that list of traits, and for me it makes a nice definition of what love is, and would just read it to you here. Love is that which communicates and listens, which supports and affirms one another, which teaches respect for others, which stimulates a sense of trust, which encourages an atmosphere of play and humor, which has a balance of interaction among its members, which shares leisure time, which fosters a sense of shared responsibility. Love also is that which teaches a sense of right and wrong, shares religious understandings and perceptions, respects the privacy of one another, and which admits and seeks help with problems. Almost all behaviors.
Your business about you do it and then you feel it. I'm remembering that wonderful part in the play Fiddler on the Roof, where he's asked, do you love each other?
Yeah.
No, I mean, these are arranged marriages, just dutiful marriages, and suddenly, love.
For 35 years, I've washed your clothes. I love that.
Do you love me?
That's a great song.
You know, bringing it back to the family and working with children who are without their fathers. And after they grow up, or even, I look at lots of mothers who are single parents and their husbands have left them for a variety of reasons. And the kids are asking about daddy, and the mothers continue to say, oh yes, your dad loves you. And then the kid, continue to believe in this. And then finally they come to the point and say, my dad loved me. Why didn't he do this? Why can't he write me a letter? Or why isn't he here? Yeah, why isn't he here? And I usually advise mothers when their children are in such pain about that, not to tell them that the father loved them. And because love to me is an action. It's a verb.
Exactly.
And I think that was a good point that you brought up. I mean, yeah, I like that.
Jesus says that himself. If you love me, you will obey my commandments. It's action.
For God so loved the world that he gave. that's like the Good Samaritan too, who was my neighbor. It's interesting too. Example is to take care of people, take care of each other. Yeah. It's an action. It's all look at that.
Enemies do it with one another.
Yeah, I like that part you used.
How else can we love our enemy?
Yeah, it's absurd.
I think in family relationships too, it can become very confusing for children.
Yes.
Who really is the mother in the family? Yeah. If the real mother is gone, mm-hmm. but now that there's a stepmother who does all the mothering and taking care of, It's very hard, though, for stepchildren sometimes to call that person mother, even though she's doing the mothering role. Because the
very often impossible.
Yes, the real mother still maybe sends them a birthday card and whatever, you know. So
and
it's hard, I think, for children to make distinctions.
And in the step family, where you have male and female and children here, and this is a stepmother, and real mother's out here.
Way out.
And we say natural mother.
I thought we weren't
saying
real
mother.
First mother.
Biological.
Because the children very often will say that's my real mother.
Yeah. Biological mother.
Yeah.
Part of the challenge here is that here you have a natural bond. Mm-hmm. Just like in your case with the absent father, even though the father isn't there, there is a natural bond that can't be denied there, and has to be acknowledged and recognized that this person, no matter what her behavior, is mother. But
not necessarily the word.
Huh? What?
The noun, not necessarily the verb.
What the noun, not necessarily.
That's a nice way to put it. Noun and verb. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And one of the probably clearer ways to, for the kids to talk about that is to talk about this person is doing parenting rather than mothering.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the mother here.
That's right.
But in the parenting
role,
love is expressed.
That's right.
That's true. Not necessarily.
That's debatable. It is expressed by the doing, by the verb.
Right.
Okay? By the verb, it is expressed.
Yeah, even though it's not.
It may not be verbally expressed in saying, I love you, dear.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And sometimes it may not be that touch. But in the action part of that, it is.
It can be.
But it can be misinterpreted by the children. It can be misinterpreted by the biological father.
And interpretation is completely another
question. That's the difference.
The stepmother may feel like her actions are loving, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the surrounding people in the family could even identify that the stepmother loved the children. And that's where the whole problem of the wicked stepmother comes into play.
Well, I guess I'm just assuming that we are talking about the positive aspects of this. Now, because there are the wicked thoughts of the wicked stepmother when the stepmother is not actually wicked, but someone has implanted that thought, and especially with children, some children, not all parenting persons are evil or wicked to the stepchildren.
I have a question. I don't have any stepchildren. Does it make a difference what age these children are when all this occurs, when this attitude occurs? If the child is 1 year old or under two or three or something, or it makes a lot of difference if they're 5 or 6 or 10 or 12, I should think it would be enormously different.
Yeah. It makes a difference as to how old they are, what sex they are, what they had for breakfast.
Where their biological parent lives.
Yeah, where the biological parent lives.
If you're here next week, come to our step-parenting class, step-family classes. Because we cover all of that.
Right.
Okay. In our classes. And we'll do that.
Oh, are you the instructor of that?
Yeah. She's my wife.
Among other things.
Among other things.
And do you have, are there kids, are there kids, yeah. Step kids?
Yes, yeah. We are both step parents.
Yeah. Okay.
I have one, she has two.
And this is why you can run in and out, he doesn't get mad.
Right.
Why this person just ran in and out? Paying any attention to this important speaker.
Well, you know, and I,
she has a real attitude towards this important
before.
Speaker.
Well, you know, there's another point in this too, because I think it. I think it depends upon the relationship that the husband and wife has, that really somehow set the tone to how the children are going to react to those steps too. So
you guys will all have to just come next week when we do it all over again. Come to hear our session.
I'm still going to come.
Good.
I mean, I can't. You know.
Because we're going to talk. Because one of the things we're going to do is we're going to again talk about the different ways that families are formed and how they work. And part of it is directed for people who aren't necessarily living in a step family as a way of educating.
Understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it would also help, possibly help understand some of those situations with single parents and, the kinds of dynamics going on there. One of the things that I'm trying to what time? How long have I
ran? 20 after 11.
20 after
11.
Ooh, I've got 10 minutes. I better talk quickly. It's difficult for somebody to
start. Yeah.
Let him talk.
Okay, so we where did we go? Jesus defined. Family,
the will of God,
as those who do the will of God. The will of God equals those who love. Then we talked about loving as doing these things that build harmony, unity, understanding. And essentially what I'm suggesting is that this understanding of relatedness as having a relatedness which is primarily through Christ rather than through blood gives us a new basis for creating family and for creating community. And I think that goes whether we have first time nuclear family, step families, gay families, lesbian families, whatever configuration, whether it might be a grouping of people that have no blood ties whatsoever. This forms the foundation, then, by which we can come together as community. Recognizing that Christ is the source. As we relate to Christ, we become brothers and sisters with one another. And that means that we become brothers and sisters with our own children. We become brothers and sisters with our own parents. Which has some real implications for the way that we run family.
At a certain point in life, and you see it too, children become parents to their own parents.
Rules. Yeah. Role shifts. So the role is not the same as this.
Right.
That's a helpful thing. I mean, role is not equate to love. It can be, but It's not the same.
You know, and also, I don't know, and maybe I don't want to step on her because I see some things transferred between the two of you. So I don't know if I should look. What is your name?
Barbara.
I don't know if I should look at you when I ask this question. but see, to me, that label of step,
uh-huh.
Okay, that in itself plays somebody below.
That's right.
And that's bad. How did we come? Oh, Barbara, where did that step come from? You brought up the wicked stuff. And I know Cinderella is.
The step is an old English term that means the children are affected by death, right?
Yeah, bereaved children.
Step apart. They're not.
You can say remarriage with children.
They're not legally blended the blood child for inheritance purposes. It's you know the.
It's an economic.
Son is the blood.
Is it the blood continuation of the blood tradition?
What's going to do with mourning?
It's not a blood.
Yeah, that's where the name. Came.
Yeah. The name comes from the preponderance of second families being formed because of death. Very often, women dying in childbirth.
But as we talked about yesterday, that you need to name what you are. And we were talking about that there were about six step families just right in our little block. And most of them did not call themselves that. They wouldn't recognize that. And most of them are broken up now. They haven't said, okay, we're a step family. We need to start reading. We need to start dealing with these issues.
We need
Whatever
to be able to.
Yes, we need to.
We need an identity.
We are not a first-time nuclear family. We have a different makeup. Therefore, we have special challenges
and opportunities. And we need to be able to explain why these relationships are taking place like they are, because step relationships typically. Aren't like blood relationships. You know, there's not the affectional bond that is naturally there between a step parent and a step child. And you know, that's what I'm trying to get at here is that if we can understand that there is a basis for for the bond, perhaps that will help. But I think what Barbara said is, we need to be able to name step families so that we recognize the dynamics that are happening, because step parent step child relationships just aren't the same.
Has the term blended families helped at all in this process?
Well, not really. As
blended.
As one writer said, you have the image of putting everybody into a blender, and in that sense, it's accurate because step families can be very bloody.
Married with children.
Yeah.
See, I guess, some of the dynamics are the same in a step family, blended family, in an adoptive family. I think there are a lot of similarities.
In a step family, blended family, adopted family.
Right. And I think sometimes we focus too much on the differences.
It really
makes things. Because I was in a class, it was called the blended family. They didn't want step family in our church. They didn't like the term. Nobody who was natural family came. They thought it was only for step families. Once they found out the dynamics were similar, they started saying, wait a minute, this is, my child also disobeys. So it really, to me, I think sometimes it depends on what you're dealing with. In a natural family and in a
blended family or our step family, you're going to have disobedient kids, people that are unruly.
Right.
So this, to me, there's a lot of similarities.
Right.
And adjustments.
There are a lot of similarities. And there are a lot of unique differences that have to be identified. Because if you approach the step family or blended family or remarried with children family or whatever you want to call it, family, the same as a first-time nuclear family. The image that I used when we started off the week was, you know, it's like being on the farm and trying to treat the horse like a cat.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if, you know, just imagine what happens when you try to put the milking machine on the horse. Doesn't work real well. You don't get very good results.
Yeah.
Because a step family is really a different animal.
But
there is a basis for relating and for focusing the growth and for coming together as a community of people. And that basis, I think, can be in our relatedness to Christ and seeking to do the will of God and to be loving and caring of human beings with.
And patience.
Well, 1 Corinthians 13, I think, is a good example of what love is.
Did I miss?
What is that?
1 Corinthians 13.
Is it in there?
Everything is, it's in there. All that's in there. 1 Corinthians 13 talks about all those little actions.
Yeah. Yeah.
It talks about patience, love, long suffering. Yeah. It's right in there. All of my actions.
Yeah.
Love is.
Ephesians 4.
Yeah.
It's good.
You know, New Testament has several things there about love. Okay, I think our time is
probably
about up.
But what do you have to do? Can we just continue this?
We can continue for about 10 minutes. I just needed to say for the tape person that the session is officially over.